been happening since November the 16th, 1952. Lucy Van Pelt has been playing the same trick on Charlie Brown for 70 years, starting this year. You know what happens. Charlie Brown wants to kick the football. And Lucy said she'll hold the football for him. And so she puts it down on the ground, but as soon as he runs up, right at the last second, she takes the ball away, and Charlie Brown falls flat on his back. Every year it's the same thing. Charlie explains why this year he's not going to trust Lucy. And every year she gives him reasons why this time it's going to be different. And then he decides to trust her just one more time. And he's flat on his back again. I say that because I think it's worth asking, how do we forgive people who have hurt us without repeating the pain of the past? That's what I want us to think about this morning, and we're going to use Joseph as a vehicle for that. We've been following along in his story. Last week we were in Genesis 41. If you would put your finger at Genesis 45, verse 1, we'll get there in a second, but let me fill in the gaps from mid-41 through 44. Here's what happens. Last week, you remember, Joseph was brought before Pharaoh and interpreted his dream and was made prime minister of Egypt and secretary of agriculture because he said there are coming 7 years of abundance followed by 7 years of famine. Sure enough, in these intervening chapters, 7 years of abundance come and Egypt fills up grain cities with food in abundance. And Joseph is then in charge of all of that. The famine begins. And there are people hungry throughout the world, but Egypt has food to eat. And the scripture says that all the world came to buy food from Joseph because the famine was so severe everywhere. That means that where Jacob and his family are, the famine reaches them. And so Jacob finally looks around at his remaining 11 sons and says to them, "Why are you just looking at each other? Go to Egypt and buy food." But when they head out the door, he holds back Benjamin, who is Joseph's only full brother and his youngest, because Jacob's still playing favorites. So 10 sons make their way to Egypt, and when they get there, it turns out Joseph is in charge of the food sales for everyone, and he recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. And he starts to interrogate them. "Where are you from? Is your father still alive? Do you have any other brothers?" And they tell the whole family story. "Your servants are from Canaan. Our father is alive in his old age. We were 12 brothers, but we have a younger brother who's still at home and one who is no more." And Joseph says, "It's just what I thought. You're spies. You're come to find the weak places in our land, and then you're going to go back and bring him in invaders." They said, no, we wouldn't do that. He throws them in jail and lets them sit for 3 days, brings them back out, and says, "I have found the test. I'm going to send you back home, but you have to come back here and bring your younger brother. We'll see if you were telling the truth." He sends them on their way with grain in their sacks, and without their knowing it, he's had his servants take the silver that they brought to buy the grain and put it back in their sacks. They get a day's journey away. They open up the sacks to feed their animals and feed themselves, and they see the silver and think, "What is happening?" They make it back to their father. They tell him, and he says, "Maybe it's a mistake. Let's just stay here and figure it out." But the famine goes on and on and on, and ultimately they run out of food. And Jacob says, "Go back and buy more food." They said, "You don't understand. We're not going to be able to buy food unless we bring Benjamin with us." And Jacob says, "I've lost one son. Now you want to take the other. I might as well just die now." But finally, hunger prevails. And they go back to Egypt, and they come before Joseph, and he sees them coming. He has them brought to his house, and he prepares for them a feast. Each of them is fed, oldest to youngest, but every time the courses come to Benjamin, there are 5 times as much. They have a great feast, and he's going to send them on their way. They brought twice as much silver to pay for the old food and to buy new food. He has all that put in their sacks, and he has a silver goblet that he uses at every meal, and he uses for some kind of divination, and he has that put in Benjamin's sack. The brothers make it a day's ride away when soldiers catch up to them and say, you've repaid evil for good. You've robbed us. They say, we wouldn't do that. If anybody's stolen, put them to death. The rest of us will become your slaves. So they open those sacks from the oldest to the youngest. And when they get to Benjamin's, they find that silver cup and they rend their clothes in grief. They come back before Joseph and they say, just make us all your slaves. He said, I wouldn't do that. Just the one who's guilty. Benjamin is going to stay here and be my slave. And then Judah stands up and says, don't do that. That's going to kill our father. He's lost one son already. If he loses this, his youngest son, it's going to put him in the grave. Take me. I'll be your slave instead. That's where we pick up the story at Genesis 45:1. This is what happens. Then Joseph could control himself no longer in front of his attendants, and he cried out, everyone leave my presence. So there was no one with Joseph when he revealed himself to his brothers. And Joseph cried so loud that the Egyptians heard it, and the house of Pharaoh heard about it. And Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? But his brothers could not answer him because they were terrified in his presence. So Joseph said again to his brothers, come close to me. And when they had done so, he said to them, I am your brother, Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And at that, he said, and now do not be discouraged. And do not be angry at yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me here ahead of you. This is the word of the Lord. It's a long saga we're following. And this is a good story, well told, about what happened between Joseph and his brothers. What I want to know is, why did Joseph put his brother through this gauntlet of tests? And I think I have an answer. I think the answer is that Joseph has been working to forgive his brothers over a long period of time. That he knows what we should know, and that is forgiveness is essential to our own well-being. Not forgiving someone who hurt you is like pulling around a wagon filled with heavy rocks behind you. You don't weigh them down. You just weigh yourself down. You just pull the past behind you wherever you go. When we choose not to forgive someone else, we don't hurt the one who's hurt us. We just bind ourselves to the memory of the past. But when we say forgive, sometimes I think that we think that entails that we're going to put ourselves right back in the place where we were before. But that's not true. There are at least two things we mean when we say forgiveness. One is what psychologists call release forgiveness. Release forgiveness does not require any action on the part of the person who hurt you for you to work through. And release forgiveness does not seek any kind of reconciliation with the person who hurt you. In fact, all it ends in is separation. Sometimes, when someone has hurt us, we don't want anything to do with them. We may not be able to have anything to do with them. The person might be dead, but the way they hurt you continues to wound you. Or the relationship might be dead, or you might be in danger if you continue to engage in that relationship. Let me be really clear here. God does not want you to be in an abusive relationship. Did you hear what I just said? Because I want you to hear it really clearly. God does not want you to be in an abusive relationship. Anytime anyone is in danger in a relationship, it is okay to get out. That's a basic principle of life. Forgiving and releasing someone does not commit you to go back where you were before. Sometimes you just have to let people go out of your lives. And if you've got folks like that in your life, here's how you do that. You make a list of the people who have hurt you and with whom you have unresolved pain and anger. And then make a commitment to pray by name for the people on that list every day. Because when you begin to pray, what you do is invite God into the circumstance and into the situation and ask for His healing. You ask for God's help so that you can forgive someone else. You know what I think? I don't think we have much capacity to forgive in us. We have a real ability to hold on to things. But God, who is love and who has power, will fill us with that love and exercise that power and enable us to forgive. And in fact, when you ask God to help you forgive someone else, you come to a point where you realize God really is making a difference in my life. And here's a hint. This is how you can tell that's happening. You'll discover retrospectively that you are thinking less and less about that person, except when you're praying for them. And when you realize, man, I haven't thought about that person since the last time I prayed, you begin to realize how much of your life being hurt and angry has been eating up. And then you ask God to fill what is now an empty place made void by that loss of anger and pain, to fill it with grace and love and opportunity. You see, what prayer does is moves us from the one who hurt us and toward the God who heals us. That just makes all the difference. I think that's what Joseph has been doing over a series of years. I think he has been praying and asking God to help him let go of his past, praying in a way that lets him get past the pain of the past, to get the pain of the past off of his hands. And the reason I think that is because of how big God has become in his life. We see the freedom that comes from that sort of release in the way Joseph finds blessing after blessing in difficult circumstances. We see it in the way that Joseph finds God's purpose at work in his life everywhere he turns. Frederick Buechner says, "Miracles are more apt to proceed from faith than faith from miracles." Miracles are more apt to proceed from faith than faith from miracles. What that means is, if you're thinking, if God was just through something amazing, then I would believe, you're probably a long way from believing. But when you believe in God, when you look at the world through the lens of His love and His grace and His forgiveness, you begin to see Him at work in all kinds of places, in all kinds of people around you all the time. And then one day, these brothers that He has been asking to be released from appear back in His life. And this is one of the great ironies of life. When you learn how to let go of someone without an expectation that there could be a reconciliation, sometimes that's the precursor to being able to let them back in your life in a healthy way. Okay, so we mean two things when we say forgiveness. Sometimes all we're trying to do is let go of people in a way that lets us get healthy. Sometimes when we forgive people, what we want to do is be reconciled back to them. What we know in this moment is Joseph has changed. What he doesn't know is whether his brothers have changed. And I think that's the question. Have you changed? That is behind this gauntlet of tests that Joseph puts his brothers through. I think that's why he holds Simeon back as a captive. I think that's why he requires that Benjamin come back with them. That's why he treats them unequally. It's why he puts the cup in Benjamin's sack. It's why he waits to see if anyone will stand up for his only brother. Have they changed? Joseph knows that change is possible. After all, he has changed. But he can't be sure that they have changed. Joseph knows we can become less of what we used to be and more of what we ought to be. He also knows that that kind of change is not inevitable and it's not automatic. So when you've been hurt by somebody, among the first things you have to ask is, do I believe that people can change? Some people don't. Some people, you'll hear them say it, once a thief, always a thief, once a cheat, always a cheat. Past performance is the best indicator of future performance. They view everyone through the lens of the past. And you can do that. But I have to tell you, if you choose to live that way, if you choose to believe that way, it's going to take you to dark places. You'll start to become cynical about yourself. You'll start to become cynical about others. You despair about yourself. You become hopeless and helpless as you look at what life might look like in the future. And if you choose to go down that path, not only is it going to take you to a dark place, it's going to take you farther and farther and farther from what the Bible says is the way the world really works. The Bible here, as it does everywhere, deals with the question of whether we can change with utter realism. Which means when we heed the biblical counsel, we become more and more realistic and more hopeful about what are the possibilities. The Bible doesn't say that human change is easy or that it is inevitable. It makes it quite clear that changing is demanding, requires discipline. But it's also possible. The Bible just doesn't come out and say, hey, people can change. What the Bible does is tell us story after story after story after story of people who behaved in one way over a period of years, and then they change. And they behave in a new way, in a better way. And it's saying to us, it is possible to change. If you want to be reconciled to someone who has hurt you, it's different than just letting them go. If you're just letting them go, it doesn't require any action on their part. If you want to be reconciled to someone who's hurt you, they have to repent and they have to make a change commitment. So let me tell you what is not an apology. It is not an apology to say, I'm sorry that you are hurt. It's not an apology to say, I'm sorry if what I did or if what I said offended you. That's to transfer the responsibility to the other person. If you weren't so weak, if you weren't so lame, if you weren't so immature, then you wouldn't be blaming me for this. That's the undercarriage of that. I'm sorry for whatever it is I did. It's not an apology. A real apology, a complete apology, has four components, and it sounds like this. I'm sorry that I hurt you. I feel, and this is what I'm going to do to make sure that it doesn't happen again. It's taking responsibility. I'm sorry I did that. And I know that it hurt you. And that makes me feel responsible, sad, regretful, frustrated. And here's the commitment that I'm making to change. See, the goal of an apology is more than just forgiveness. The goal of an apology is reconciliation. And if somebody's hurt you, I mean if they've really hurt you, not like some little minor thing that happened. If someone has hurt you, there's no reason for you to be reconciled to them if you reasonably think that the future is going to look like the past. If you're just going to do this to me over and over and over again, we're just Charlie Brown and Lucy Van Pelt. And we know how that story goes. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting... Right. So a real apology includes a change commitment. I have to identify, here is the thing that I'm going to do, and here's how it's going to look different, and you can grade me on it. And then what's happening is you're being invited to take a risk, to believe that the future really can be different than the past, that somebody else wants you to do for them what God has done for you. And you need to ask, are they really serious about that? That change has to be sufficient to know that the person can say, this is going to be worth it. And that's where the forgiveness journey begins. You really don't get to ask for forgiveness until you've taken all four of those steps. You really cannot be asked to offer forgiveness until someone has taken all four of those steps. That's where the forgiveness journey begins, and with God's help, you can do that. You really can. And if you think that's too much for you, I want you to know this: God redeems all he allows. God redeems all he allows. Joseph could look at his brothers and say, you were bad actors. But God did something with that. And because I'm so mindful of what God's doing, I can have a grace for you. If you think it's going to be too painful and I can't go that way, I want you to know this. It is by God's providence that you are here right now in this moment. You weren't born 100 years ago. You weren't born 100 years hence. God has you where you are and when you are because he can use you where you are and when you are. If God could not bless you where you are and when you are, you would not be where you are and when you are. If God couldn't use you and bless you in the here and now, you wouldn't be here right now. God has a dream over your life. That's what Joseph's story says. That people do things that are not good, and yet God brings forth good from them. And God can, even in the midst of the pain you have endured, bless you and bless others through you and enable you either to let go or to find the path through to forgiveness. Joseph and his brothers are starting this journey to forgiveness. We're going to see next week in our last sermon with them that they are years into the future and still on this path to forgiveness. And we're going to see the blessing that comes in their lives and the lives of the people around them when you're faithful to walk that journey. What we know is this: forgiveness is essential to our own well-being. Sometimes we just have to forgive to let go. Sometimes all we want to do is to release them, to release the relationship, to release ourselves from the pain. That's okay. And sometimes what we want is to be reconciled to somebody else so the relationship can be restored. Both of those are hard. God will be with you in either of those journeys, and part of what God will do is make you more like Jesus as you grow in them. Change, like forgiveness, is not inevitable, but it is not impossible. It is possible. And with God's help, with God's grace, you have it in you to begin. Well,